Welcome to your house.
Welcome.
Who are you? Why do you do it? Who am I? What do I do? And why do I do it? My name's Andrew Padula. I'm a DJ. I'm a music producer. I'm an artist. And I'm a business owner. Why do I do what I do? I make art because I don't have a choice in it. I don't have a choice in the matter, so that's why I make art. I make a lot of different art. Predominantly, it's always been music. Let me say that again. Predominantly, it's been focused on music. But as I get older, the creative process is being extended to different mediums and doing other stuff. And quite enjoyable, actually. Why do I do it? And what was the question?
So, like, how did you? Well, let's break it down. We'll start from the start.
Yeah, yeah.
What inspired you to do what you do? Or what took this turn that you're here in this studio? What point in your life did all this begin?
Well, this began It began very early in my adult life as a teenager.
Yeah.
And that progressed into my adult life. But ever since I can remember, I've always been either involved in music, DJing, or making music. So I kind of don't know any other life style.
So when you were a baby, what was your preferred instrument? Did you have one of those trumpets? Or did you have like a little...
Well, the funny thing was, I played piano as a child.
Did you have one of those flutes?
Of course. We all had one of those flutes, and we all had those mini guitars that had one string left on it, because I was a third of three children, and by the time it got to me, it was literally in its grave. So we had one of those. I did have a recorder, which is, I think, is what you're referring to.
Yeah, so the recorder.
Yeah,
that little leather case?
I've still got it.
Has it got the buttons?
Yeah.
What colour?
Shit brown. It was either shit brown or cannoli white. So you got one or the other.
Favorite cannoli?
Favorite line from a movie: grab the cannolis. Oh, what is it? Leave the guns, grab the cannoli. Leave the guns, grab the cannoli.
Love that.
Favorite line in a movie. Favorite cannoli? Ricotta, man. Sicilian.
There you go.
Yeah.
So do you think... Your background's Sicilian?
Well, my parents are originally from Italy.
Italy,
yeah. So mum's Sicilian, and dad's also from the south.
Uh-huh.
But yeah.
And they have musical backgrounds?
No.
So what drew you to music?
I think it was more a love for dance music at a young age. When I was young, dance music was predominantly underground still. To a point where, actually, when I was 18, we started to see dance music grow. What am I trying to say here? When I was 18, we started to see dance music becoming more mainstream. And I think... the love of electronic music, the love of underground music for, 3 or 4 years before that. And then seeing that become mainstream, it was almost, I was seeing the thing that I love being validated, which was a good thing. It was always a good thing. But I love DJing. I love the culture. I love going out and buying records. I've been doing that since I was 14. I remember I bought my first record when I was probably about 13. So
where at?
First record I ever bought was at Brash's.
Brash's?
Yeah.
$14.95.
Brash's. Oh, man. It was like fucking still the same fucking price as it is now. Believe it or not. Man, that shit's always been... They've always kept their fucking prices tight, these guys, man. Always. But respect to that.
What was your first record?
My first record was... it was I'm pretty sure it was NWA.
Nice. Nice.
Pretty sure.
I've got to tell you something.
Sure.
My first ever cassette tape that was given to me.
Yeah.
Was NWA.
There you go.
And my dad threw it out.
No shit.
Yeah. He's like, well, you listen to this black music, huh?
Yeah. There you go.
Especially with the big fucking explicit thing, a bunch of black dudes standing on it.
Yeah.
Straight in the bin.
And then he put a fucking broomstick behind you. the NWA was my first one. I didn't have a record player. I just liked the fact that I was drawn to it.
Yeah.
I loved records. I've always loved records. I've got a lot of records.
How many records do you
have? Probably in excess of 10,000.
Jesus.
Yeah, there was a period where that was the medium where I was using.
Yeah,
that's what I was using as a DJ, and you know, every week you'd go out and you know, I've been playing for almost 30 years now, and so you'd go out and you'd buy 10, 15 records sometimes a week. I was lucky enough that I was in the position to be able to do that, so you amass them pretty quickly. Yeah, and then you know, you kind of get other people's collections and you acquire stuff
through means,
just you acquire collections. But yeah, so records always kind of had that. I love records. And the funny thing is that for a long time, so I played records in clubs for a good 10, 12 years. And then obviously that transitioned into digital music. So starting out with CDs, so CDJs, so you start playing CDs. And then that again transitioned into, you know, more digital music, but USBs. And only recently have I started playing on vinyl again and buying vinyl. Believe it or not, like, it's the first time in years where I've always bought vinyl. I bought vinyl that I don't necessarily play in clubs, but I enjoy listening to. I enjoy listening to most of my music on vinyl. But I'm actually buying a lot of music that I'm playing now in clubs on vinyl. It's great. It feels right again.
So the whole circle's come back around.
Yeah, and it's nice because you go out there with 80 or 100 records and you got to make do with that, as opposed to having infinite number of songs and just not knowing what you're going to do. And always kind of, and the problem I find with having too many songs is that you rely on what you know. And so you get stuck in this little pocket of music, whereas records are a very visual medium. You can see things in the box, like, you know, the spine of a record. I know what it is. And that automatically just jolts my memory, and it helps me create my sets in a very different way. It's a very different way. It's way more enjoyable, way more spontaneous. I love that shit. That's for me, that the art form is in that. The art form is in that. The other stuff is more of a performance or a job. Yeah. Nuance. It's all nuance.
Strawberries or blueberries?
Blueberries.
Mongoose? Morning Star.
Mongoose.
Kia or Hyundai?
Kia or Hyundai? Now?
Now.
Hyundai.
15 years ago?
Kia didn't exist. Hyundai. Either that or nothing.
7 years warranty.
Ford. 15 years ago. Commodore.
Would you say you're a religious man or a spiritual man? Or?
I'm a very spiritual man. I wouldn't say I'm religious at all.
Okay.
Yeah. Those two things are very different to me.
Okay. How so?
Religion is organized spirituality. That's the way I see it anyway.
Okay.
Its roots lie in spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's developed into, I guess, the business of spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a shop front, man. You can walk in, you can buy shit.
Oh yeah, of course. Anything, like anything is a shop front.
Hmm.
Huh. So beyond catering and being a performer, you know, to people on the weekends, or any day of the week nowadays in Melbourne, what are you doing from a creative point of view to be played at nightclubs? How long have you been doing something with the production side of things?
Okay, so there's a few things that make up the ecosystem of me as an artist.
Yep.
One is the DJing. That's obviously the that's the pointy end of it. That's the performance.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not performing something live, it's usually through the means of DJing. But I'm making music. My journey with making music is, and everyone's is very different. Making music for me is very personal, and it's been a very how do I say this? Making music has been a journey into myself. It's an inward thing for me, and that's taken a long time for me to understand that, acknowledge it, and then feel comfortable with that.
Okay.
I mean, it sounds cliche, right? Art should reflect the artist.
It should
reflect the emotions of the artist. But in this day and age, sometimes, a lot of the time, art reflects the culture or the narrative or what's cool, which is fine, but then you're getting a lot of the same thing. So if art was to really represent the individual, then every piece of art would be completely unique to that person, as everyone is completely unique.
100%.
So understanding that, and then having to kind of crawl through the sludge of developing my art form that is reflective of me, that's been a big thing. And it's something that's taken me quite a long time to do. And it's been an incredible journey, I've got to admit. But my music, like making music for me, doesn't happen unless there's something that I want to say.
Okay.
There's something I want to say, there's something I want to convey, there's something I want to share, and that is then uniquely mine. And so for me, I'm not, well, I don't do this as a day job, make music. I do that when I feel like I need to make the music. At the moment, I am in the process of making that music and telling a story through that music, which is really exciting. There's actually a couple of narratives which I'm trying to bring together musically. So there's a couple of projects going on here. But I like doing other stuff. I like doing other stuff. And the more and more, well, the older I get, the more I realize that everything that I do is all part of the ecosystem of who I am as a person. World building, storytelling, all that stuff's really important to me. And it's also finding a way in which I can do that and convey these stories and tell my story. I heard a really interesting quote by Jacob Collier the other day, and he was saying, it was on Instagram, and he was saying that, you know, there's this perception that when someone gets really big, they're taking away from everyone else. And what he said, he looked at it very differently, is like, no, when someone expands and gets really big, the way he sees it is allows other people then to strive for that, to shine, to expand as well.
Give that opportunity.
Well, to know that you can do that.
Yeah.
And I really love that. I thought that was a really cool thing. I'm a huge fan of abundance, and I think there's enough for everyone, and that everyone should try and get as much as they can. Not in a material way, more in a spiritual way, or a, you know, a love. That I don't know whether that makes sense to you. Again, you know, these are kind of concepts that I'm constantly refining and trying to understand myself. What else you want to ask? Talk to me, because I'll go off on a tangent here for
hours.
That's
okay. I'm happy for you to go off on a tangent. I'll jump in. Pink Floyd or Led Zeppelin?
Led Zeppelin. See,
here comes a tangent. Here comes a tangent.
Hang on. No. I say Led Zeppelin because they're one of my favorite bands. As a DJ, I like to, and it's funny, things are changing. Things are changing as a DJ. So when I first started DJing, I was a stomper.
Oh yeah.
I just wanted people to stomp. Now I'm, the older I get, the more I just want them to move. Yeah, flow. So it's still Led Zeppelin, but not as far as it used to be. Not by that long stretch that it used to be. Yeah. They both made some really incredible things. They both made incredible music. Both English, which is there's something to be said about, you know, that English rock and roll. But Jesus, just, I mean, like,
well, I think both of their influences run deep from the South of the States and Buddy Guy.
Well, there's a funny story on that. One of my favorite people in history is a guy called Alan Lomax. I don't know whether you know. I think I've told you the story about Alan Lomax. Alan Lomax was maybe a music writer, but he used to work for the Library of Congress in the States. And his father, John Lomax, used to do the same thing. And what John's job was to go around and basically document the music that was happening around America at the time. This is in the 30s. There's no radio, there's no access to a lot of that stuff, right? And the stuff that they were documenting wasn't being played on the radios anyway. Anyway, Alan Lomax, you know, took over from his father. He started working there, and he was like, and they were both kind of recording stuff like almost at the start of the, I guess, agricultural revolution. Well, not agricultural revolution, but mechanical agricultural revolution. Machines started to take over. Machines started to pick cotton. Machines started to do the plowing. And so therefore, especially in the South where most of the slavery was, a lot of the slavery was happening, that started to dissipate a bit. And so those communities, the slaves and the black communities started to dissipate. The owners no longer needed them. And so, and this is why there's such a huge, huge culture of Chicago blues, because from South, they used to migrate up to Chicago. But his job was to document all that stuff. And he realized that, man, there was this whole body of music, this whole culture, this whole thing that was going on, that if no one captured that, that'll be lost.
It was quite well known that before Buddy Guy had gone to London to perform, no one in the States knew him, but in London he had Robert Plant, Mick Jagger, Eric Clapton to come and see him.
I think you're talking about Muddy Waters. You're talking about Muddy Waters, and this is, and now let me go back to this story about Alan Lomax. Alan Lomax was the man that discovered Muddy Waters.
Okay.
Alan Lomax put Muddy Waters' music onto acetate.
Okay.
He recorded him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He recorded guys like Lead Belly. The story about Lead Belly was Muddy Waters was tipped off that there was this guy who was an incredible blues guitarist and songwriter and singer, and he was in jail. He'd been put into jail for like stealing bread.
Yeah, yeah.
And honestly, had it not been for someone like Alan Lomax was a white man. He went in. I think he got the governor to pardon Lead Belly, but he recorded him whilst he was in jail. So the story is he recorded, like, and Lead Belly was the guy who recorded Black Betty.
Mm-hmm.
These songs have a story behind them. Black Betty was the whip or the stick that the cops used to hit, or the owners would hit the slaves with, or the cops would hit the inmates with, the black ones, you know. And so these stories are really important stories. And he was able to preserve these stories, document them. Now, going back to what you said, so he'd record all these, you know, like I said, Muddy Waters, Son House, all these guys, and he'd put this on acetate, and those records would then be shipped to the UK. And this is where you're right. So what would happen was, as these records would be documented, and it was even some time afterwards, but they'd find their way to the UK. And guys like Mick Jagger, guys like Keith Richards, and guys like Eric Clapton were there waiting for these records, and they never heard this music before. So to a degree, he's almost the most influential, one of the most influential people in modern day music. As a result of those records, the blues gets exposed to the UK. As a result of that, the British explosion, the Beatles, all that happens. And so without this guy, who knows what would have happened, but it's arguable that that wouldn't have happened in that way. So therefore, that kind of would have changed the course of history. I find that really interesting because no one knows who this guy is. And he died in the early 2000s. He lived a good life, and he went around also after that and documented music from all around the world. He documented music from Central America, from South America, from Europe. He was an incredibly influential guy when it comes to music. I love that guy. But
what do you draw from him?
Well, story. Okay. Story. It's important. Story is important. And this is where I think I've always resonated with music that tells story. I've always resonated with that. You can't pull the wool over my eyes with that shit. You know, if you're telling a real honest story, that will always come through. That will always come through with me. And that's how I listen to records. That's how I choose the music that I listen to. That's how I buy records. And you can tell. It's like mainstream music is a carbon copy of everything else that's going on around it. And there might be like a slight differentiation between each song, but essentially it's the same thing. I mean, you can, you know, I'm not saying mainstream music now. It's like always happened. You know, you had Jump Blues, for example. You know, there was, when Little Richard was around, there was a formula. It was two and a half minutes, man, or it didn't get played on radio. And, you know, during the bridge or, you know, during the solo bit, there was a sax solo going on. And like, it was always the same thing. And if you listen to all those 45s from that era, but it's similar. It's always been happening. With that said, I really like that music, even though it was mainstream. But I really like that music because it wasn't mainstream. It was formula driven, but it wasn't mainstream. You know, Little Richard is a motherfucker. Love him. Funny thing about Little Richard was, you know who his guitarist was? It's a gentleman by the name of Jimi Hendrix was his guitarist at a very young age. And there's always this story with Little Richard. He always tells it. He claims ownership of Jimi Hendrix. Discovered Jimi Hendrix. He's my boy. But he always claimed that he'd be an incredible guitarist, and he was.
You know the story of him, Hendrix going
to the UK?
To the UK, and Clapton asking him to come on stage. Well, the management asked him to come up on stage with Clapton, and Hendrix took the show, and Clapton told him he'll never fucking play with him ever again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was that.
It turned out to be, he didn't respect who is on stage with.
My favorite story with Hendrix was just after he did a show. This was in the UK, and just after Sgt. Pepper was released. It was literally a day after Sgt. Pepper was released. He had this show, and someone told him on the day of the show, whilst they were in the dressing room, the Beatles are here. So John and Paul were there. I think the whole band was there. And he had heard, and Sgt. Pepper blew his mind when he heard it the day before. And he said to the band, he's like, we're going to perform this. And it's on YouTube. You can hear it. But he performed that song so incredibly well. And the Beatles were blown away by it. And they were just like, how did this guy learn this track? He listened to it once. Like, I mean, he was that kind of dude. And it's actually a really fucking awesome version of that song. But yeah, you don't get them like you used to.
No, you don't.
Do. No, you don't. Oh, you do now and then. I think Jacob Collier is an amazing musician. He's generational. I think Jack White's generational. Some people are going to get offended that, you know, you know, I've got the Black Keys up there. I've got a friend of mine who, there's always a debate, Black Keys or Jack White.
I'm sticking to Jack White, I think. I love the Black Keys, but I think the Jack White's got more impact.
I love Jack White.
Yeah, there's an impact.
I love the Black Keys too, but I love Jack White.
Jack White's got the edge.
It's got the...
It's got something. There's something there.
Bit more juice.
Yeah.
Bit more juice.
There is.
Yeah. He's got a lot of shit going on as well. And he helps a lot of artists. Not that they don't. Mm-hmm. What's his name? Black Keys again?
Are they brothers?
No.
Huh?
What's his name? Hang on. Fuck, I can't believe we've drawn a blank. Dan Allback.
Allback.
So Dan, yeah, so the debate is between Jack White and Dan Allback. Jack White, Dan Allback. You're choosing Jack White.
Yes.
I'm choosing Jack White too. So I've got debates going on with friends. They, one or the other. They're both similar. It's just, you know, just Jack White's just got the juice, man.
What's the guy's name from Gorillaz? Damien.
Damon Albarn. Damon. Yeah. From Blur as well. Yeah. Love him. Love him. Artistically, I love him. Yeah, absolutely. David Byrne, I love. I love it. I love the people that... I love when people love music. Mm. I love when musicians... You can tell musicians that love music, that buy records, that listen to music from Africa, that listen to music from the Middle East, that listen to music from everywhere around the world, not just influenced by pop music or Western music.
Yeah, of course.
Like, you can just tell. It's just like, you can tell. It's incredible when you hear those, when you hear the production of that stuff. You know, Damon Albarn is a white guy from the UK.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, music has a way of de-gentrifying things. It has a way of bringing you back to cultures and heritage and story. It's got a way of doing that. That's why I love music.
Do you think? What's your stance on what Melbourne and Australia has to offer in terms of music? You know, I think we've gone through a stage where 70s and 80s we were a big, and 90s. Up until mid-90s, we were a big city that prided ourselves on live music. And a lot of bands came out of Melbourne, and Australia in general. You know, some of the biggest bands are from here, you know, worldwide.
Sure.
That's not the case anymore. And is that because of culturally, we don't have that?
Music evolves, man.
Okay.
Music evolves, culture evolves, scenes evolve, and that's, you've got to ride the wave. Yeah, I'm a DJ, so it's my job. I mean, in a basic form, is to listen to music, to like it, and then to play it to other people because I think it's good.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm always, you know, I've always got my ear to the ground in regards to what music is fresh and what music I'd want to champion and push. I think the Melbourne music scene is, and the Australian music scene has always been real strong. Like, it's always real strong. Well, now we've got, what, 25 million people? 26 million people? Well, look, we'll go back 15, 20 years ago. Let's say that at the millennium. What did we have, 17, 18? Go back to when AC/DC was around. go back to when In Excess was around. What was our population in the 90s? Probably the same, 16 mil. You know, we've got amazing bands. We've got, you know, Kevin Parker, we've got Tame Impala, we've got, but there's just so many. There's so many. Like, it's infinite. Per capita, I think we do pretty damn well here. Is live music dead? Fuck no. It's not dead. It's not dead. I live in probably, or arguably, the live music city of Melbourne. I live in the inner north of Brunswick. So, you know, there's a lot of live music going on. I understand what you're saying. I think the focus, especially over the last 20 years, has turned to nightclubs and electronic music. And it's just because of ease. And because of the growth of the music style.
Yeah.
And the culture. And the dance music culture. Being accessible, yeah. Dude, you put a couple of turntables in, you put a mixer, you get a DJ to play all night.
But also in terms of production.
Yeah, it's
you don't need to be
things. Everything feeds everything else.
You don't need to be in a band to be able to play music.
Well, you don't need to be a musician to make music anymore.
That's right.
So if you look at that, if you look at it from that perspective, even up to the late 90s, you needed to be a musician to make music. You needed to have some musical competency to make music. You couldn't just make music. Or you can make sounds, but experimental music was more of a genre than an ethos. Well, yeah, yes and no. Like, don't hold me to that. But yeah, experimental music has always been around. But musicianship, that I think that's been the biggest difference in the last 20 years, in that with the advancements in technology and the way you make music. Pro Tools and, you know, digital workstations. Anyone can make music. And now, like, it's so simple. Like, you just jump on a program like Splice. It's got every element of any type of genre that you want to make. And you can just download and just put it into your tracks. Like, even the... Like, I mean, you know, everything's really easy if you want it to be. But again... You can never discredit, or you can never diminish the power of music that's made by real musicians. You just can't. There's an expression in that. It's like you're more versed in a language. You can articulate more. You can describe things more clearly, deeply. So. I love music back then. I love music now. I think Australia is incredible. There are a lot of my favorite producers are Australian. I think right now there's an explosion, especially in Melbourne. So Melbourne's kind of like, you know, Melbourne's really driven around. I've spent a lot of time in Sydney this year. And there is a huge difference between Melbourne and Sydney as far as music goes. Sydney surprises the shit out of me. I really, really... align with what's going on in Sydney as much as I align with Melbourne. I really love what's going on there. But that's more kind of directed, that's more focused on electronic music. Yeah, clubs, electronic music producers, DJs. I love what's happening over there. It's almost like what was happening in Melbourne 20 years ago.
A bit of avant-garde going on over there.
But it's just fresh. Yeah. You know, it's just like, it's more driven that way. It's set up for that culture. Whereas Melbourne's more like, you know, it's like drenched in the soul, funk, jazz, you know, cultures of music, styles of music. And so you got a lot more live music here. You got a lot more of that soul funk thing going on, the jazz thing going on, the world thing going on. It's kind of attracting, you know, a lot of that. But also there's a deep, and always will be, a deep ingrained rock and roll scene as well. There's always will be. There's always someone belting out a psychedelic rock track somewhere, or a hard rock track, or, you know, or an emo track. But, you know, we don't want to talk about that. I've tried, man. I've tried. One of my mates. No, no. Look, to all your emails, man. It's all love, man. It's all love. One of my good mates, Stewie. He's a fantastic producer, and produces a lot of emo, and I don't even know the genres, to be quite honest. But he's incredible at it, and I appreciate it for what it is. I've tried. I think the thing is with me, there's one thing that always draws me to music. The first thing that always draws me to music is rhythm and funk. And the funk, well, it's the funk. And when you're taking the funk out of music, like, it's just hard for me to listen to. Because it's always about, I love that. Mm-hmm. You know, it moves me. That's a personal thing. But yeah. Bootsy, man. Tell you the story about Bootsy Collins?
Nah, go on.
There's a story, apparently, a journalist from Rolling Stone magazine wanted to interview him. A story about him. He either released something or they were talking about his life or whatever. It was not too many years back either. And he rings up Bootsy. Bootsy's got a ranch in the middle of fucking nowhere, right? In the States. And he's like, right, we're going to do this. Yep, I'm coming down tomorrow. We're doing this thing. Great. I'll see you here. Yeah. Okay, baby. I'll see you there. And so this guy, apparently, like, is in the middle of nowhere. He's got this ranch. And this guy's driving, down these highways and this and that. And he sees this flicker of light. It's just like this constant flicker of light happening in the distance. And he realizes that he's going that way. And the closer he gets to this thing, he's like, I think that's coming from his place. Sorry, I've got it. Let me go back on that story. The story is that Bootsy didn't know when this guy was going to come. He just said, come when you want. Sorry. There was never a date organized. And so this would have been a random day. You're not expecting him to come. Just random day. And so this guy's driving towards him and he sees this light, this flickering light all of a sudden. And as he's getting closer, it's getting brighter and brighter. And he realizes that when he rocks up to Bootsy's door, it's fucking hot as fuck, like it's in the middle of the desert. The sun is reflecting off Bootsy's disco ball onesie as he's playing his bass on his veranda. To no one in the middle of nowhere. I thought, that's fucking brilliant. That's just him. That's Bootsy. He's like, I ain't got shit to do today, but I'm gonna dress up in my disco ball onesie, which has got real glass on it. I'm gonna sit on my hot ass fucking veranda. I'm gonna play my bass, and that's just gonna be my day. And so the sun's kind of reflecting off this thing, and that's I thought, man, like, that's the real shit, you know? You can't bullshit that stuff.
No, you can't. Most mediocre concert you've ever been to.
Most mediocre concert? Fuck. 90% of them. I reckon I choose good shit. I've got it. Look, I give myself credit where it's due. I wouldn't go to a shit concert.
Okay. But there's gonna be it. There's gonna be something out of all of them. Like, I went to Chili's last night, and it was a 6.6.
Yeah, but this is
mediocre. But that comes down to, if it was at it. Let me tell you, if it was an intimate concert with a couple of hundred people, it would have been brilliant.
The most mediocre concert I've been to is probably watching Dave Grohl and the Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's a motherfucker. I love him. I love Nirvana, one of my favorite bands. But it's like, I don't necessarily like a lot of what they do. I know that there's a lot of fans that do like what they do. But I love the fact that these guys are going for 3 hours straight and just ripping it. Someone told me something years ago, and I love this, and it was their reflection on live music. And they were like, you know what? Like, even like the worst concert, the worst band you've ever heard, he goes, I challenge you to find the best thing about that band. Focus on that and you won't have a shit night. And so I kind of try and do that. You know, like the Fooey's, like, I love their energy. I love Taylor Hawkins, fucking madman. And I love the way Dave Grohl interacts. It's a beautiful thing because he's really elevating people's spirits. He's a genius at that. So it doesn't become about the music. But yeah, that's probably, I know what you mean about the Chili's. Listen, man.
Good. They're a good studio album, man.
No, they're a great band, dude. They're a great band. Not just a studio album band. You're talking about one of the greatest guitarists of all time.
That's
you know, you had the privilege of seeing John Frusciante play. 100%. Yeah, the privilege of seeing Flea play. 100%. Yeah, the privilege of seeing Anthony Kiedis sing. The privilege of seeing
Dave.
It's not Dave, dude.
On the drums.
It's not Dave. It's not fucking Dave, dude.
It's Dave. David Chapman, isn't it?
I can't believe I... No.
Well, I'm saying Dave. What do you reckon, Dave? I reckon Dave.
He's got Dave. Chad Smith.
Dave Smith.
Chad Smith. Dave.
Chad. He looks like a bit of a Chad.
Looks like Will Ferrell.
He does look like a
Will Ferrell. Identical for Will Ferrell. Yeah, have you seen when they did the Late Show thing, the drum off?
Yes. Yes, I did too. Yes.
So you got, as parts of the whole, they're incredible. And as a whole, they're incredible. I've got one of my mates, Shane. I reckon he's in the top 1% of hardcore Chili fans. He loves them that much. He's probably in the 1%, but he's not like wants to be Anthony Kiedis. He's a cool guy. He's just into them. He loves it. You know, he's got a couple of tats. Like, he literally went and saw them. He got tickets to England and saw all the shows in England. Recently on this tour, he's gone around every state and watched every show. He's watched every show. He was there last night. And I chatted to him about it today. And he's like, man, you know, and I agree with what he says. The Chili's are a band that haven't sat on their laurels and tried to make money from their past music. They're always trying to write new shit. And they've got a great creative process that they apply when they're making music. They go into a studio and they jam, and that's how they write. They don't, you know, fucking sit down and, you know, reflect on shit that they recorded on their phones and ideas and stuff. It's like they jam, man. It's like, it's a creative process together, and it's whatever's coming together that becomes the music. And that's the way you write music. You jam. And so, you know, whereas, like, you know, you look at bands that are the same ilk as them, same era. Guns N' Roses, Bon Jovi. I mean, has Bon Jovi done anything notable in the last, I don't know, ever? No. Besides Slippery When Wet? Like, I mean, you know, like, there's some great songs. Like, Slippery When Wet was an amazing fucking album. And there's great stuff.
Even the Boss.
But I don't put him in the same thing. Nah.
Nah.
No, I don't, but, yeah. Nah. No, I love him. He's a great songwriter. But I don't listen to his stuff. I think his hits are great, but I don't know enough about him. I can't talk about him. I just don't know. But the Chili's, man, are always pushing. They're always trying to write new shit. They're not trying to draw from the past wells.
So I
respect that about him. And John Frusciante, go into him as an artist. Go into Flea as an artist. I mean, all these guys have got side bands and side projects, and they're doing so much different, diverse shit. I've got to fucking respect the shit out of that, man. Like, John Frusciante's making fucking drum and bass. He's making fucking the craziest shit. Experimental stuff. He's into, he's like, his wife's a DJ. He's fucking loves disco, loves synthesizers. Like, there's all this kind of world behind him as well, which I fucking love. Again, it's like I'm always drawn to the musicians, to the people who are in love with music. I'm always into that. I love music. I love that thing. I can tell if you don't love music. I can tell if you love a genre or you love like the culture of that thing, what's going on with that thing. You know, there's a lot of people who go to techno parties. Why do they go to techno parties? They want to dress up. They want to go to a Bushdoof. Why? They don't give a fuck about the DJs. Half of them. But they want to be in that environment. They want to dress up. They want to go with their friends. They want to camp. You know, they want to fucking get fucked up, take mushies, take acid, you know. They want to do all that stuff. It's the experience. Whereas when I go to a thing, it's because of the music. It's literally because of the music. What's happening around, the environment that's happening around that is a bonus. And if I align with that and I'm into that, then that's fucking great. It's a great night to be had. But yeah, I try to steer away from mediocre. I try to. And I usually find that anything that's big, I respect it, man. I respect it. But why would I want to go to a fucking Pink concert? I get it. I know people are into that. I love it. But I couldn't think of anything worse, dude. I could not think of anything worse. I'd rather go to the fucking Tote and listen to, you know, the fuckwits. You know?
So what's, if you had one opportunity, if I could give you a free ticket to a concert, who would it be to?
As in like dead or alive, past, present, or now?
Past, present, your computer. So we just got Steve Jobs making an entry. If I was to give you one ticket to present artist.
To present artist?
Yes.
Who would
past,
it be?
Past is, who would it be? Who would you want to go see?
Fuck, who would I want to go and see? Who would I want to go and see? Who would I want to go and see? We might be here a while, dude. Look, you know what? I think
I'll tell you something while you think.
Yeah.
So I was in Poland a few years ago, and the Cinematic Orchestra.
Oh yeah.
Was playing in London O2.
Yeah.
For one night only.
Yeah.
Never seen them.
Yeah.
Decided no, it wasn't worth the money to go over there and pay all those euros to fly there, get a hotel
room. Yeah.
And what happened was I missed out.
Yeah.
I'm happy to wrap it.
No, keep going.
I'm happy to wrap it.
Oh, love you. Hey, tell you what, where do your heart is through tuna, isn't it? Huh? I give you a little bit of tuna.
Did you give a tuna?
Yeah.
Oh shit.
She loves it.
She loves the tuna.
She loved it. I think. Oh.
She wants a hug.
Oh no, you don't want a hug here. Come here, you don't want a hug, right? You don't have that. What do you want? Oh, you want to? You maybe you can smell the tuna on my hand.
She just wants a hug, I reckon. As in, like, just sitting hugs.
Okay. Yeah. I can do that.
From where you are.
Come on.
Neely, what are you doing? What's wrong?
To answer your question, one ticket right now, I'd want to go and listen to
you don't know
someone I've never heard of before, because that's the one, that's the thing that's going to excite me the most. I'll be honest with you, that's the thing that excites me the most. Something important with music, I've realized as a DJ, there's two kinds of people. Yeah, there's two kinds of people. Well, there's a a lot more than two kinds of people. But from this perspective, there's a player, there's a creator. Yeah. And that realization came to me. It wasn't my own realization. It was something that was handed down to me by Tarek. He explained this concept to me and I love it. And ever since, it's made so much sense to me to navigate music and people and artists through this evaluation. Two kinds, creators, players. Players just want to be part of it. They just want to play. They just want to be involved. And it's usually those players, the players are mainstream, big artists who, to become a big artist, you need to be a big personality. And so it's drawing from that, being a player, being able to work with people, to be able to collaborate with people, not just on an art level, but on a more a life level. Now, the disclaimer is, neither one of these are wrong or right. There's just two types of people. And you can use both of these to your advantage. And there's a creator. Now, the creator is the constant pursuit of creating something different. The creator doesn't care about being involved. Creator doesn't care about the limelight, the money, the fame, maybe a little bit, but doesn't care. The main prerogative of the creator is to create through their soul. It is a life journey. And so you'd always find that there's a depth in the creator. There's not a depth in the player, not so much. It's a depth in the creator. And if the creator doesn't do the art, they die. If the player doesn't do the art, they invest in Bitcoin. There's always something to do with the player. Whereas a creator is a blessing and a curse. You make it work for you, it's the ultimate blessing, because you just constantly creating. You know, your Tom Waits, your Nick Caves, your Warren Ellis's, your everyone. It's creative, it's pure, it's soulful connection to their art. Nina Simone, or you can see it, you can feel it, you can listen to their shit, or you can see their art or watch their films and just go, I get this guy, or I get this person, I understand, like I can feel it, what they're going through. Whereas the player, you know, the player is take it or leave it. Players usually make more money though.
Yeah, but the game had to
work. Well, there's a depth. There's a depth in the creator. So, going back to what I was going to say, is that as a DJ, you realize very quickly when you're on the dance floor, whether you got creators on the dance floor or whether you got players on the dance floor. You got players on the dance floor, you need to play music that they know. You got creators on the dance floor, you can take them on a journey with shit that they don't know. I've very much decided moving forward over the last couple of years, over the last year especially after COVID, that I'm only going to be a creator. I'm only going to be a creator. So if you want to list the shit that you know, definitely don't come and see me play, because I'm not going to give you that. I'll give you moments, but I ain't going to give you that narrative that you already know. And it's funny, you'll know. Here, player 101, put on something that they don't know. What's this shit? Creator 101, this is fucking mad. What's this shit?
Yeah.
It's different. It's different. Nuance. Different. Completely different. So I think for me moving forward, it's always trying to cultivate and develop the creator in me, not the player. You can be the player. Not you, but 98% of the world. Yeah. Be the creator. Don't be the player.